Penguin Random House Canada presents Half Bads in White Regalia by Cody Catano. Read for you by the author. For Zion, Milo, Eli, and Osias. Prologue. The Buckle. Ask any half-bad to tell you the story about how their bad half came to be, and they'll probably begin with the buckle. The buckle is a rumble that hijacks the interior faculties to make one think and act without compunction. The buckle attacks the locus of focus and apes the half-bad's best intentions, only to play them like a chump chimp. And if left unchecked, the buckle will keep going until the frequencies connecting them to community fizzle out into the ether of rumor and myth. The buckle's kink is myopic stimulus, pitching id toward what one elder warned me against. That big do, little think, business. And what little I've learned in my meager years of living is that a half-bad story is always concerned with a big do and the amount of blue the half-bad feels for doing it. Baddies are different. Infamous pros who go the distance. Baddies work in tandem with the buckle, will just mutter fuck it to themselves real quick and not lose any hairs over it. Baddies relish in the wanton swelling of the genitals, nervous systems, fists, and lips. No matter if it costs them a best friend or credit score, or if it breaches what sleeps between armpit and sternum. In the stories baddies tell, the buckle is instinct, and they can't help it. It's the buckle, and that was yesterday. Just get over it already. There are many stories about the buckle royally messing something up, a good chunk of which are so gnarly that most people just send the baddie on their way. Toss the bastards on Baddie Island. Free ticket on the one way. As they should. Because those stories leave many feeling as though there's no way but the one way, no getting over it, and we come to them hoping they'll teach us the differences between baddies and the rest of us. But they also leave some half-bads curious and terrified about the rapid onsets of their own buckling, wondering if there's something to be done before the big do comes to usher them from half-bad to baddie. Or maybe it's better to just think of the buckle as a warning attached to every half-bad story, even if the half-bad never warns as such. Part 1. Happyland. The east side of Happyland. Nobody called it Happyland back then. We didn't know Happyland was a thing. But that two-street highway community of ours is most certainly there if you zoom in far enough in Google Maps. People just called it the house, or East Side Drive, or Severn, which swallows every highway community within a few kilometers or so. But the internet tells me we lived on the east side of Happyland, just across the freeway. And there must be something there if the internet tells you so. The east side of Happyland fits nicely into the plot of Severn, which names a dozen patches of human activity scattered along Highway 11. Not the Queen's favorite land, either. Mostly feet-burning, unforgiving turf. Summer so humid it hurts. Burger joint, bathroom break, and pit stop just up the road. Way before it was called Happyland, a few Nietzsches came to this place and named it Gissenausebing, which the township's website translates as cold water, back when the Nibbe was only clean and cool and life-given and pristine. It's easy to imagine the Ngigwag roaming and the Nietzsches loving it there unconditionally for a long time. It's also easy to imagine butterfly towns popping up like chickenpox across Little Miss Dominion, and clusters gathering along the lake, with batty thoughts of burger stops and disposition inbound. 'Cause both things happen. But so did our time living on the east side of Happyland. Before any patches, pox, or burger stops, and even before those Nietzsches took back their grist mill or set those fishing weirs up, the oldest ones on this island, the Nibbe here went untouched for hundreds of millions of years, pooling into lakes and lolling in lazy rivers that snaked and warmed and expanded and rose with the heat coming from the heartbeat up in the sky. The Bull and the Old Woman. Before I was born, and before we moved to Happyland, two half-bads named Mindamoye and Otoro rented a three-bedroom townhouse in Toronto's Downsview neighborhood. And while I have about zero memories of them ever getting intimate, mind a brief kiss during Fear Factor or a good job baby embrace after watching me beat the opening boss on Star Fox 64, they most certainly did a big do one awfully hot and soggy mid-August day in 1994. 'Cause 9 months later, Mindamoye rushed her butt over to Women's College Hospital when she broke water. Said I came out in no time flat and with an obstructed intestinal tract that made me gassy and colicky. She named me after Mel Gibson's kid in Tequila Sunrise, which I've never watched and don't plan on watching anytime soon, thank you very much. But just picture colicky me and Mindamoye getting plenty sick back then. Ziplocked ice cubes melting in pellets down her crown, in the constant rhythm of pinching and twisting the lids off medicine bottles. Got this sick with my big brother, Julian, too. Rightfully blames the cartons of cigs and cough antibiotics. Even remembers calling poison control one time. Anything to kick those vice grip headaches and fevers that wouldn't quit. Sometime around then I got dropped on the head, which explains a bit. Like plenty, Otoro and Mindamoye got sick of living in the city. 'Cause cities make people sick sometimes. Besides, Otoro had always wanted to leave and try raising his family on a river. Something to offer me and Julian and our big sister Christine. 'Cause Otoro would swim as a fish if he could. When Mindamoye got a job as a server at Casino Rama, making $7 an hour plus infinite tippage, she and Otoro went looking for a house around there. They wanted the bush, but settled for half bush. If you can still hear the highway, you're not in the bush. One of the casino bartenders who sometimes flirted with Otoro told them about this four-bedroom, two-floor house at the maw of a marshy forest that faded into leafy darkness. Granny suite on the bottom floor. Just a 15-minute drive from Sunshine City and Casino Rama, too. Rural route number 3. Neither of them minded the house's occasional history of family breaking. But the real estate agent did mention some of the previous owners when asked, including one claptrap couple who went through the nastiest and noisiest divorce in the county shortly after moving in. Never mind the families before them, too. I've always wondered if it was the house that broke the family, or the family that broke the house. Maybe that's why they got it so cheap. Nobody knew about the swamp until long after we moved in. Sure, the previous owners had already solved a few of the plumbing problems by adding filtration systems and installing a reverse osmosis system under the kitchen sink so whoever lived there had a drinking source. Yes, the current divorcing owner's cats left a batch of fleas as a housewarming gift, but the new ones wanted the house too much to give a crap. Otoro wanted the pool table, the lawnmower, the blinds, all of it. So in 1997, the five of us moved into Happyland with help from some aunties and uncles. And it wasn't too long before Otoro began building a debark cedar fence around the perimeter, right before the front and backyards dipped into a channel moat that would fill with slush during the many stormy days and nights to come. Sodadje. It didn't take long for the house in Happyland to become a place for tented backyard gatherings and celebrations.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?